Elementary music teacher friend, you love what you do, but you might feel unappreciated and, in fact, unseen some days. You may even feel like you're on a music teacher island and just want to connect with other music teachers who can relate to both your struggles and wins when it comes to teaching elementary music. I get you and understand completely the feelings you're having. That's why each and every week, the Elementary Music Teacher Podcast will provide you with solo and guest episodes that will help you realize you're not alone in your music teaching journey. Throughout each episode, my goal is for you to be able to walk away with actionable steps and ideas to help you feel like you're ready to take on the new week with whatever challenges may be thrown your way. Hi, I'm your host, Jessica Paresta, and I'm so glad you're here. Whether you're at home, in your car, in the shower, or wherever else you're listening, grab your cup of coffee or whatever other beverage is nearby and listen in to the Elementary Music Teacher Podcast.
I'm Mike Brilla, host of the Inspired Teacher Podcast, a part of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to now. Shows on the network are individually owned and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.
Hello, everyone. Before this episode gets started, I wanted to say that this episode originally aired on the MusicCast podcast with F-Flat Books. So I wanted to replay the episode on my podcast because I think the content is relevant in helping you on your music teacher journey. So if you listen to the MusicCast podcast and you're like, wait a minute, I feel like I already heard this episode, then it's just in two different places. It's the same content though. So I hope you enjoy it. I hope that you get value from this episode. And I hope that you are inspired in knowing that you're not alone in the feelings you're having around teaching music. So with that said, let's dive right in with today's episode. Hello there. I'm Jessica Paresta. I am the professional development, the brand new professional development coordinator for F-Flat Books. We're so excited to get that going. I'm also the author of Make a Note, What You Really Need to Know About Teaching Elementary Music, which you can find right at F-Flat Books. And I'm also the CEO of The Domestic Musician, which is a music education company that has a membership site for elementary music teachers and a lot of free resources. So go and check it out. And I'm also the podcaster at the Elementary Music Teacher Podcast. I am so excited to be here to talk about the topic of 10 things no one talks about with you as a music teacher. This is definitely what I wrote my book about, and I'm not going to read my book word for word because I would love for you to read it. But I wanted to go in detail about this topic today because I think it's so important. There are so many things that you really don't know about when you become a music teacher. You feel prepared, you went, you know, you got your degree, or maybe you got alternatively certified, or however you got in your music teaching position, but you sometimes feel like, oh my gosh, there's a lot no one told me, and it gets a little overwhelming. So most of this episode that you're listening to today comes from what is written in chapter 4 of my book, Make a Note. And other parts of this episode come from personal experiences that I have faced, different coaching I've done with teachers one-on-one, or from conversations I've helped foster between other music educators that I've gotten to facilitate. You get your teaching position, and whether it's your first year or your 25th, there are just honestly, some things that you kind of had to figure out on your own, or let's be honest, are still figuring out on your own, and they're just never really discussed. So I know that was the case for me anyways. I got my first teaching position in the middle of a school year, right out of college. I graduated in December and got my teaching position, so I started in January. Not only that, I was at a school that hadn't had music for 7 years. It was a Title I school. I had no funding, no instruments, no nothing. And like, let's say I had even the perfect situation. I walked into a classroom full of 25 instruments with all the teaching resources available to me. I would have still felt overwhelmed. So whatever your situation is, whether you feel like you don't have enough resources or too many, or you had a great mentor or have a great mentor, or you don't, there are still things that no one talks about. So we're going to talk about it today. So let's go ahead and dive right in. Number one. There are tons of interruptions throughout your day. Now, some of these interruptions are school-wide, whether you are aware that they're happening or not. You know, I'm talking about fire drills and assemblies and those kind of interruptions. And sometimes you don't know the interruptions are coming. Let's go back to that. Fire drills and assemblies. Maybe someone forgot to tell you, or it was called last minute, or, you know, those unexpected drills that happen that nobody tells you they're coming because they want it to be a surprise for you too as the teacher. Yay. But the interruptions that happen, like I said, are either school-wide or it's something that happens in one of your classes. Maybe they're just kind of having an off day and it doesn't matter what you're trying with those kiddos. It seems like nothing's working. There's just sometimes certain class periods or a certain group of kids that are just off that day. And then also there's interruptions that happen from individual students where someone, let's be honest, with the little ones starts crying, or there's a conflict you have to help resolve, or I know this happened to me, and those of you listening who are secondary teachers, I don't know if this still happens to you, but with those little bitties, especially the kindergartners, the beginning of the school year, I'd have accidents on my floor. They would fail to tell me they needed to go to the restroom. Constant interruptions, you know what I mean, blurting out, getting up, not being in their seat, twirling in circles in the back of the classroom. I always called those my spinners. I would put them in the back row on purpose so they could just spin to their heart's content on the floor. But interruptions are normal, and it's something that you need to try to mentally prepare for. You know, I don't know about you, but when I was preparing to become a teacher, I was taught how to make, you know, those 20-page lesson plans we have to turn in for, in our college at music ed program. But it was like, we learned about lesson planning. We learned about classroom management. We learned that, hey, if you try all these classroom management approaches we're talking to you about in college, you're going to have smooth sailing in your classroom. I don't know if your professors were that way, but that's kind of what was implied with me. Then I go and observe these teachers during practicums and even my student teaching experience, and it seemed like everything was just kind of coasting along, and it was like, oh my gosh, this is how it should be. This is how it's going to be for me. But what no one fails to tell you is, or I guess what they do fail to tell you is that these teachers you're observing and the teachers you're doing student teaching with, your cooperating teacher, they've probably been teaching for a while. And they've probably been at their school and their actual placement for a while. Meaning they've already gotten to know their students pretty well. They've already worked on relationship building. They already have their classroom management system pretty well like established. And it's not going to necessarily look like that for you when you get in your first teaching position or when you go to a new school building, or depending on what school you're at, it's not going to be a cookie cutter approach. So there are tons of interruptions. This is normal. I don't want you to sit there and think you're the only one that has interruptions happening throughout your school day, because it's not true. It's not true. There will be interruptions from your students. There will be interruptions happening in different class periods. There are going to be school-wide interruptions. And the goal here is for you to try to stay flexible and practice adapting and adjusting your plans when needed. Don't beat yourself up and be too hard on yourself if you've had lessons planned and you're super excited to teach them and there's just like, feels like the wheels of the wagon are just kind of falling off that day. Then pivot. Have a backup plan, have some lessons ready to go or ideas ready to go if those moments happen, because they will, they're gonna happen. And just be, when you're expecting it to happen and you're mentally preparing for it, then when the interruptions do happen and you know you're not alone in this, it's not gonna make you feel as overwhelmed as it could have in the past. Number two, another thing that is not really talked about a lot is that identifying your teaching style takes time. I'm going to go back to college again, and I'm going to talk about, you know, I remember writing the paper, The Philosophy of Education, and I looked back at that paper, honestly, I graduated in 2004, and so in the dinosaur ages, but I looked back at that paper not too long ago and was like, oh my gosh, like, I didn't even know what I was talking about. I got a good grade on it. Like, I did put good thoughts into the paper. I really thought it through. But my gosh, I hadn't even started teaching yet. How am I supposed to have a philosophy of how things are going to go in a classroom? You have no idea. And so identifying your teaching style takes time. You know, when someone's asking you to, what's your teaching style? And you're like, I have no idea. It takes, I feel like, years of just being in there. And honestly, we're going to go back to what I said on point one, being at different schools and knowing what the culture is in your school building and your administration, what their expectations are of you, and the different teachers in your building and different workshops you're going to attend. And you're going to sit under different professional development opportunities and under different mentors, and who are all going to pass on ideas to you. And this is going to help shape your teaching style. It just kind of takes time. You're just kind of expected to know how to teach and what your style is when you become a teacher. But this takes time. It takes getting in there and doing it to figure out what your style is. To me, your teaching style is where the teaching method or methods you choose to present music from. Elementary music teachers, yes, it's okay. And this is a whole topic for another day. I know I've done episodes of this on my podcast, but teaching methods, I'm talking ORF, CADAE, DALCROZ, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You don't have to just choose one. You can use multiple approaches, and you get to be you. Your personal musicianship and experiences that led you to be a music teacher ties into your teaching style. What your students need from you is part of your teaching style. So do all of that, and that helps develop your teaching style. When you combine all of those things I just mentioned and bring them to the front of mind each day in your classroom, you end up becoming exactly the music teacher your students need. And also, when I talked about your musicianship, everybody's different, right? Like, I am a classically trained pianist. I also played clarinet in band all the way through college, and I had opportunities to play after college and things like that. But I'm an instrumentalist. I have sang in choirs, but I've mostly been an accompanist of choirs. So my musicianship background is I love instruments. I love incorporating instruments into my classroom. I love using instruments. I also love doing a lot of movement. And but that's my teaching approach. That's what I'm comfortable with. You may be a singer, and that is something you were really passionate about, and you want your kiddos to really be passionate about singing as well. So your musicianship, and yes, this differs, of course, whether you're teaching elementary or secondary. If you're teaching band, of course, your main focus will be teaching instruments. I am very well aware of that. But your musicianship should continue into your classroom, should inspire your music teaching. Your students want to know what your background is as a musician. They see you as a music teacher, but they don't know you, you know, your pre-music teaching self. So talk to them about who you were before you became a music teacher and what your musicianship background is like. Focus a lot on what your students need from you and not just what you think they need. And also be you, because your unique approach is needed, and it doesn't matter if you're the only one doing things the way you are. I've always been that way. I've always kind of like marched to my own drumbeat, and I used to think it was a bad thing. And like, I felt like at professional development workshops, even the ones my district would put on, that I was seeing all the way the teachers were doing things. And I'd think in my head, like, I'd be taking notes in a notebook of the ways I was going to do what they're teaching me, but how I was going to change it up in my classroom. And I always felt like I was the only one doing that. Maybe not, but I felt like the black sheep in my district. So maybe that's you, and you're like, I feel like I kind of marched to my own drumbeat. I want to tell you that that's okay. So that goes right into identifying your teaching style, because when you bring your own personality into your classroom, your students need that. They need you. All right, so number three, choosing songs to teach is not easy. It's not easy. Whether you teach elementary or secondary, there is so much repertoire out there. I feel like I butchered that word, but you know what I mean. Teaching resources available, and it's beyond overwhelming trying to choose songs to teach to your students. I mean, there just really is so much material, and that's actually a good thing. It is. And there's new material being put out there every year, but it can cost you so much time trying to search and search and search and search and wonder and wonder and wonder and wonder if you're choosing the right material for your students. It's not easy. No one tells you this when you become a music teacher. You know that it's going to be overwhelming choosing songs and material to teach to your students. But here's what I want you to do. Go back to knowing your students. What music do they like? What cultures are represented in your music room? what styles of music inspires them. As long as they're getting a great music education, that's the main goal. It's about quality over quantity. When you focus on teaching music with quality songs, your students are going to excel. The awesome thing about being a music teacher is that you can also change what you do. There is nothing set in stone. There is nothing saying you have to repeat the same songs every single year. You're allowed to change your mind. You're allowed to find different music and take other music out that you've done in the past and replace it with something else. So make a decision for this school year, knowing that next school year it can definitely change. You might find that you're starting to get bored teaching the same content year in and year out. That's normal. Another thing no one tells you about. It's okay if you change your mind. That's why there's a list of songs. Make a list of songs that you want to teach and just have like a running Google Doc of how you can plug in different activities and songs based on the concepts you're teaching your students. So, for example, if you're working on singing in a round, you might have 10 to 25 songs on your list to choose from. You're obviously not going to get to those 10 to 25 songs with your, let's say, third grade students, but you're going to have a list going. So if you've done the same five rounds for the last 3 years, then maybe you're ready to change out for a different five set of songs and just keep changing your mind as you go. Remember, it's your classroom and changing things up from time to time is completely fine. And it's normal to want to change things up. It's your classroom. Number four, making your music classroom inclusive to all learners is crucial. This is something I wanted to touch on and something I put inside my book because I really do feel like, you know, it's here's what to teach to kindergarten. Here's what to teach to first grade. These are the concepts to focus on. These are the folk songs that you must use. But yes, all that's important. That instruction was important. I carried it with me, but nobody really discussed the making music classroom inclusive to all learners part. I feel like, and I can't label every college and teacher prep program, but I feel like now colleges are doing a better job of preparing future teachers for the classroom in this way. Back in the early 2000s, I don't feel like that was the case. As an educator, it's so important that you include all learners. You have kids with all kinds of different giftings and abilities coming through your doors. There are kids who need more support than others, some who are gifted and talented, and others who have special needs. It's hard to figure out who needs what from you, especially when you see 500 plus kids, right? But you're more than capable of helping each and every student thrive in your music classroom. The classroom teachers and the resource teachers at your school are more than willing to help give you the right adaptations that a certain child needs. You just have to be willing to ask for help. I know that's easier said than done, and I understand that every one of you listening to this doesn't have necessarily resource teachers that are just willing to help you. But look for those teachers that are willing to help. Ask questions about that child when you feel like you have questions. You are legally allowed is what I'm trying to say, to see a child's 504 plan and IEP plan. Maybe you're not sure if the child is on an IEP or 504 plan. So simply ask. And when you do, when you look at that plan, you're going to see the plan for that child of what works for them. And also, you're also going to be able to see what's working in, let's say, reading and math, and be able to kind of get ideas for how you can adapt it for the music room. There's also behavior plans that you can look at for different children as well to see what's working, what maybe would work in the music room. And let's go back to what I said earlier. A lot of it is trial and error. It's getting in there and doing it and trying. There's not going to be a perfect approach and a perfect, you implement something that day and it just immediately works. No, it just takes consistency and effort and trying your best every day. Sometimes the information about a child or children is given to you, and the special education team at your school is great about providing services and support for what to do in the music room. And sometimes you're going to need to be proactive in obtaining this information on your own. When you do know a child is coming into the music room with a specific disability or disorder, or they have a learning disability or whatever it might be, do your own research as well. I did this a lot because I understand that there is not a lot of training given, especially to music teachers, about all the different kiddos you may be having coming into your music classroom. So do your own research. Learn about ways you can help that child be successful when it comes to learning music. Every child can and should learn music. It's not a matter of if they can, but how they can. The awesome thing about the day and age we live in now is there's the World Wide Web, right? There are so many websites with blog posts and podcasts and research articles and books that are there to help you with helping a child succeed. So honestly, just do a quick Google search about maybe a child that you're really struggling to reach, and you're going to see a lot of advice come up. And when we're talking about making your classroom inclusive to all learners, reevaluate the way you're grouping kids together. Make sure your classroom is inclusive. And what I mean by this is, if there's a child you know is struggling, I really always like to partner them up with a child who is, you know what I mean, those kids that come in your room that are like always looking straight at you, and the ones who always have their hands on your lap, I mean on their lap, whenever they're learning and listening. Pair up the kids who are struggling with your strongest students. And when you're doing small group activities, try to group them together that way as well. If there's an aide coming into the music room, give them specific ways they can help you in supporting a particular child as well. An aide coming with a child wants to help you. They are there to help the child be successful as well. They just sometimes need you to let them know what you need help with. Think of ways you can accommodate the music experience for your special needs learners. And number five, create a diverse classroom environment. This matters. This is so huge, to create a diverse classroom. It's so important that you're aware of the students you're teaching, because you need to make sure all students feel seen, heard, and understood. I know you're very well aware of this. I know that you are doing a great job of this day in and day out already, even if you never learned to do this or never told to do this in your music room. Your students need to be able to feel comfortable in your music room. They need to be able to hear, learn, sing, and play songs that represent their culture. It can't just be a cookie cutter approach. And I know I've said that twice on this episode now, but I mean, I don't know how else to put it. You just can't say, okay, I did things at this school this way, and now you're at a new school and you're doing it the same exact way. You're never going to have the same students. You're never going to be teaching in the same type of school. Your students need you to create lessons and create activities that meet them where they're at. So when you're trying to do things the same way as a presenter did at a workshop, I gave that example earlier as well, it's not going to always work with your students, because maybe that's the approach they took with their students. So when I talked about how I would always make notes of how I could adjust and adapt a presentation that was given, you know, a plan or teach this activity, the reason I did that is because I knew my students. I knew that I taught at a school that had predominantly Black students. And I knew that if I'm learning the song, let's say, for example, Alabama Gal, it wasn't going to always go over as well as it would with this teacher who taught at a totally different school than me. So think of what you're learning and think of ways you can adjust it with your students and what would work with them. Choose a mixture of songs, activities, stories, composers, musical artists, instruments, and movement activities to do with your students. Vary up the approach. Every student learns differently. They all have different learning styles. They all have different ways that music is going to reach them. So constantly be changing up the way you're doing things in your music classroom. Yes, a lot of what I'm saying is applied towards elementary music teachers, because that is what I'm, that's my expertise here. But a lot of these things I'm saying, when you're teaching secondary music, and if it's choir, orchestra, band, vary up your teaching approach as well. There's a lot of different ways you can do that. Discuss with your students the different musical careers they can have. A lot of times they're not aware of what is out there. So they talk to them about how they can compose music using hip hop beats. Do that with your students. Don't just talk to them about it, but let them do that. Let them experience composing music using hip hop. Learn about different musical artists and composers. When they're learning about these musical artists and composers, talk to them about these musical artists' stories. What inspired them to be a musician? What musical instrument did they learn? Where did they grow up? What caused them to write the songs they're writing? Listen to their favorite music. Have them listen to their favorite music while evaluating the music together and doing comparing and contrasting activities and doing listening and exploration. It's also important that kids experience music from cultures other than their own. So many kids are only familiar with music from their own culture. It's your job as the music teacher to make sure you're creating various musical avenues and connections for your students. Bring in live musical artists or even virtual ones when you get a chance to. Turn a classical piece of music into a hip hop experience. Let students add instruments or add beats or add their own verse or listen to different samples that this maybe classical piece has been sampled into one of a popular songs. Who Sampled is a great website to go to where you can hear popular songs that kids are listening to today where a classical piece of music has been used in a popular piece of music. By varying up what music you're not only teaching, but having students listen to, explore, experience, move to, read stories about, and feel, you're helping make the world of music relevant to your students. When you vary up what music you do, be aware of also what bulletin boards and books you're bringing into your music classroom as well. Are most of your books of just white kids? Do you have any books with pictures of black or brown children as well? Do the posters in your music room represent people with various skin colors where students can see themselves in your music room? These are all things to really consider and think about. And yes, I could go into a lot more detail about this topic, but I think I've covered the basics of this point in this episode. Number six, something that nobody really makes you aware of is that putting on a musical performance is a lot of work. Obviously, when you become a music teacher, you understand that this is just part of your job, right? Like a coach, part of their job is the football games that are going to be doing every Friday night or Thursday night for middle schoolers most of the time. For a music teacher, you understand that there's going to be performances you're putting on throughout the year. But I personally, maybe you're like, okay, I was aware of this, Jessica, what's wrong with you? But I was not aware of the amount of planning and thinking about and scheduling and rehearsing that went into putting on performances for various grade levels. So when it comes to planning performances, the first thing no one told me was that choosing dates on a calendar mattered, like a lot, like it was a big deal. Looking at the school calendar at the end of the school year and getting my program dates on the next school year's calendar was a huge, ginormous step I took that really helped set me up for success. So the reason why is because, as you're well aware of, the school calendar fills up fast. And so when you are scheduling your programs and performances ahead of time, then you're able to backwards plan and you're able to say, okay, what do I need to do to get this ready? If let's say it's in November, you work 2 months back and you're able to start preparing ahead of time. No one also tells you about the different types of performances that can happen for elementary music. Performances, there's informances, there's musicals, and also no one's really telling you what are you supposed to do. So a lot of this is going back to your administration. They're going to have expectations a lot of times they are putting on you, what they're wanting. Mine was really big on performances. She always wanted performances where the parents are attending, where the kiddos are performing on stage. We got to the point where I would do half of the grades doing performances, and then I would invite parents into my classroom for individual class informances, which that is just where students are showcasing what they're working on in the music room. But even when I did performances or programs, I a lot of times would also showcase what students were doing in the music room combined with a lot of other things as well. When you plan your performances, no matter which one you choose or which one you have chosen for you, so a lot of this is your personality. It's what you want to do, what you're comfortable doing, combined with what expectations are put on you. Once you have it chosen, though, picking a theme and music to go with that program or performance will take time. It takes research. It takes thinking about it. And like, what do you want to do? What do you already have in your music room that you can use? What songs and activities have the students already done that you can easily integrate into a musical performance? And then what music do you want to purchase to go along with your performance? Another thing that no one really talks about is that parent communication is huge. I made the mistake my first year of teaching of thinking one, you know, letter home to parents would prepare the students for them knowing about the musical performance. Absolutely not. Now that I'm a mom, I laugh because all these things, these mistakes I made, my kids lose papers left and right. They don't check their Chromebooks. They get emails from their teachers. They don't check them. They're, you know, just forgetful. Kids are forgetful. So I realized that parent communication is huge. Have the dates posted on a calendar outside your classroom. If you have a Google Classroom, have it posted there. Make sure your teachers, the classroom teachers, that they're sending home weekly communication. You're putting a snippet in there about the upcoming performance. Whatever way your school communicates, I think parents need several different touch points for being aware of when the performance is and what they need to do to, you know, get their child prepared. Whether it's getting a certain outfit, whether it is helping them practice a speaking part at home, or whatever it might be. So those are a lot of things that go into what no one tells you about putting on a musical performance. The number 7 is it takes time to build your music program. You know, I kind of touched on this at the beginning of this episode, that you observe so many amazing music teachers. Whether you're student teaching, whether you're still in college, or even in your first couple years of teaching and you're being able to observe and have discussions with various music teachers who have been in the game for a while. But you, whether you're starting from scratch like I did and you don't have anything, any teaching resources or instruments, or whether you're at a school where you're following in the footsteps of someone else who left you a lot of things, it takes a while to build your music program up. It takes time to get what instruments, materials, and resources you need for your classroom. This goes back to also, it takes time to find your teaching style. Part of that and developing your classroom management approach and building relationships with your students all tie into what it takes to build up your music program. One thing that really works, though, if you are needing things for your music classroom, is make a list of what you need and then make a list of what you want. Then figure out where the money will be able to come from to get these items. Will it come from your PTA or PTO, whatever you call it, where you live? Do you have any type of budget? Maybe sometimes you're like, I don't even know. I don't know if I have one. Talk to your principal about that. Sometimes there is leftover funds, F-U-N-D-S, that is just kind of sitting there. And your school, if they don't spend it, I mean, it just kind of sits there. So ask. Sometimes there is extra money, and your principal a lot of times will be able to help you purchase what you need. Are you able to use Donors Choose? If you've never used that before, it's an amazing site to put out there what you need and to get some help in that way. Also, there's Amazon Wishlist. There are so many people willing to help teachers right now. So just put it out there and see what happens. You can also apply for grants. And if you've never done this before, it is not as intimidating as it sounds. And there are easy ways to go about applying for grants. It just takes a little bit of research. But I want you to not overwhelm yourself trying to get everything that you need right away, but do it slowly over time. It also takes time to shape your music program into what you want it to be. The good thing about having stuff for your classroom is that no one is going to be able to, you know, take that away from you. Like, it's already there. It's already in your classroom. And then you're going to be able to know what you need to build upon. So that's the good thing about having stuff. But if you don't have stuff, I'm talking about the instruments, the teaching resources, the materials, it does take more time to build your music program up. But remember to give yourself grace in this area and to keep taking steps forward. It takes time to build up your music program. Rome was not built in a day, and neither will your music classroom be. Number 8, lesson planning and teaching lessons don't always go hand in hand. You're like, what are you talking about? This is something I had to learn the hard way. Sometimes lessons just don't go as planned. There are a lot of factors that play into this. You have classroom and school-wide interruptions, touched on that already, individual students needing something at different times, constantly, right? Like it's like a constant revolving door of someone needing something. Not to mention the fact that if there was a full moon the night before, class parties happening, or if it's a rainy day, you're not going to get much done that day. Let's be honest. We've all been there and done that. It's just going to be crazy, crazyville in the music room. So learning to stay flexible and to roll with the punches is what is needed some days. The thing they don't tell you is that you can have the most well-designed and put together lesson plan in the entire world, but you might not be able to use it that day. So stop over-planning and leave enough time in your plans for interruptions, conversations to happen in the music room that will naturally arise, and for musical creativity to take place. Knowing when a lesson plan just isn't going to work and realizing you can revisit it later is so important. So I want you to remember that point today. Number 9 is music education is going to change every year. It's not ever going to stay the same way. It's going to constantly adapt, which is a good thing. It's a good thing. There's more conversations happening now than ever. There's more being shared on social media now than ever. There is, like I said earlier, the internet with podcasts and blogs that are being shared now more than ever. It's awesome. And there's so many ideas being shared. So look at what's out there and let that transform the way you're teaching and to help you. Today, elementary music classrooms everywhere are filled with not just sitting and singing, but movement. So many instruments, puppets, scarves, smart boards, Chromebooks, iPads, books, and so many other amazing materials and resources. Besides the stuff though, kids are doing a lot more moving and less sitting in the music room. I think having education continue to evolve and change is a good thing. As the times change, education needs to as well. And so does the teaching approach you take. The kids of today are growing up in the age of technology, and it is honestly up to us as educators to keep up. It's not up to them to just change the way they learn and to change the way that society is moving. It's up to us to adapt and change with what kids are needing. What you learned while getting your education degree might be way different than what you're actually doing in your classroom now. It feels like every day you have new expectations, requirements, or some kind of new technology to learn how to implement with your students. And I understand that that's overwhelming. At the time of this recording, I'm earning my master's in educational technology, and I'll be graduating in December 2022. So if you're listening to this after that, congrats, I have my master's. But one thing that we've talked a lot about during this program is the fact that there is going to be a lot of new technology. But the thing is, it's not about what technology you're using. It is about starting with something. Start with one thing. Start with one idea, and then it will grow and adapt from there. You don't have to implement everything you're seeing out there. That will cause overwhelm. So start with something. Implement slowly. Know what your students need and where you're comfortable and do that. It also can be stressful having education changing all the time. So it's also important that you remember not to stay stuck in your ways. Have a growth mindset, just like we challenge our students to have. And number 10 of what they don't really talk about as a music teacher is that your mindset matters. You don't have to have everything perfect. Practice growth mindset, just like you tell your students to. I know I've touched on this twice now, but I just feel like it's so important to keep growing, keep learning, keep trying, keep not giving up on those days that are hard. Don't compare your teaching style or way of doing things to anyone else. There's only one you. You're not going to do things the same way as everyone else. They're not going to do the same things as you. And it's okay. It's a good thing to have your own unique style and approach to doing things. If you're feeling overwhelmed, identify where these feelings are coming from and create action steps to help you move forward and to not stay stuck. If you're feeling like your plans are not working, are you being too hard on yourself? Are you expecting too much from your students? Are you expecting too much from yourself? Think about these things as you move forward. If you're feeling tired, where are you devoting most of your time outside of school? What ways are you taking care of yourself, or what are you saying no to? It's okay to say no. Don't ever stop growing and learning. Take care of you before anyone else. This is so important, and I completely understand it's easier said than done. I get it, but you have to take care of yourself. Your mindset matters, and your mindset is going to start not being as good as you want it to be when you're not pouring into what you need. I want you to keep experimenting in your music room and be okay with not following the herd, but do things your way. Keep asking questions when you feel stuck. Know that you don't have to go it alone. You rely on a community, whether it's the teacher next door in your school building, whether it is an online community, in-person community, I don't care who it is, but rely on that one or more people to keep you going, to be able to ask questions to and get support from when you need it the most. Continue to be flexible both in and out of the classroom, and know that the hard moments and days will come, and there's just no way around it. But also know that you have what it takes, and the good always outweighs the bad. I also want you to continue doing self-assessment and reflect on your teaching practice. I want you to think about at the end of the week, what went well this week? What could have gone better? And reflect on your teaching practice. Constantly evaluate yourself. It's so important. So I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I hope that you're able to just take even one point that I discussed today and apply it into your teaching practice. I would love to continue connecting. You can find me at thedomesticmusician.com and on Instagram at Jessica Peresta. And you can also find me on Facebook at The Domestic Musician. I can't wait to continue supporting music teachers everywhere. And I can't wait to listen to all the other episodes on this podcast. Have an amazing day, friends, and I'll see you soon. Well, hey there. Thank you so much for listening into the Elementary Music Teacher Podcast. There is an exclusive Facebook group just for listeners of this podcast and any elementary music teacher called the Elementary Music Teacher Community Facebook group. Come on over and join us there, where we have conversations around the podcast episodes and encourage each other each and every week. And also head to my website, thedomesticmusician.com. I have some free resources there that you can download to help you gain traction in your classroom today, as well as the blog and the membership site and all kinds of other goodies to help you keep going in your music teaching journey. I cannot wait to keep connecting with you and encouraging you and spurring you on in your journey of teaching elementary music. Hang in there, have an amazing week, and I will see you soon.